Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition in the journey of the MCU here on Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
Hello, welcome to Nerdy Notions. I'm Sasha Kaplan, and today we're talking about the story of a little boy and his daddy issues. And that is pretty basically the summary of the movie. Thanks for listening, all negative 45 listeners.
I love our negative 45 listeners. All negative of them.
When do we start counting back down, though? Like, after we hit a negative 100?
I think when we finally get to do a panel live in person and not virtually, and we actually can see people in the crowd.
I can see this, like, 2 months from now, and our negative 5,285 listeners reporting as not here. All right. Well, to start things off, we are indeed talking about a story about Peter's daddy issues. We're finally addressing that. But a couple of things to note that very important as we go through this film. Baby Groot's voice is Tintin au naturel. Vin Diesel is not being CGI'd or his voice is not being auto-tuned in any way. It's just him. And
that shows range on the guy.
I honestly think his career is pretty big, but I feel like he could have been even bigger if he'd got into voice acting earlier.
The guy, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of a lot of his movies. Like, I can't stand the Fast and Furious films.
The ones with Gal Gadot.
But he's actually really talented. He really is.
I liked him in The Pacifier. That was a great movie.
I'm actually interested to see him in Bloodshot. I know it's been getting, like, not the best reviews, but I'm actually interested to see how he takes on that role of Bloodshot.
Yeah. So with that, we open in Missouri in 1980, where a man and a woman go for a drive. And that man is a very CGI-aged Kurt Russell. Like, they did a pretty good job, though, that he kind of looks like his younger self, but also it's kind of obvious that he's been, like, CGI'd to look younger. So, but I think that actually kind of gives some validity to kind of the, like, superfluous nature of the character that he plays, that he almost looks too good to be real.
Yeah, and Disney. The forefront of digital de-aging. Tron Legacy.
Didn't
Jeff Daniels.
Didn't see it.
Yeah, that was like the beginning of it. And then, of course, you had Star Wars Rogue One with Tarkin. Because that was an actor. And then they kind of put Tarkin onto him.
And they had a really weird-looking CGI Leia with, like, anime eyes.
Yeah. So Disney, the forefront of de-aging people.
I mean, they did a really good job with Michael Douglas, though, in Ant-Man. So I guess Marvel's doing better. But I actually like the way they did it here because it kind of looks like a younger Kurt Douglas, but it also makes him
look... Kurt Russell.
Yes. It makes him look more... It makes him look animated, and I think that was partially on purpose because he looks too good to be true. Like, his chin is just, like, way too handsome. So they're, like, cute and in love, and there's music playing, and then there's a plant that I'm sure will never be mentioned again. And, yeah, this is obviously Peter's parents, and we flash forward 30 years. We are on some weird... It kind of looks like a base or something. We're somewhere in an area and they're about to fight this monster. And they have to, like, protect some kind of batteries. And there's, like, a monster that they have to fight. And Groot and Quill arguing was kind of funny. Baby Groot is adorable. So they fight this monsters as the credits are kind of coming in, which is really cool. And there's, like, little pauses and there's Rocket saying things. And it's kind of a fun visual. And then there's the part where Drax gets, like, swallowed by the monster. He's just, like, stabbing him in the back, inside the monster. And it's just like,
argh. Yeah, he purposely jumps in because he's like, the skin is too thick. We must attack him from the inside. And it's just like, they're just looking at him going like, he's stupid. But I want to backtrack real quick to the opening sequence before we get the Drax jumping into the monster's mouth and going, ah! Baby Groot is obviously dancing as the music is playing. And a couple of the nice spots was the one with Rocket telling him to spit out the thing that he was trying to eat, like the bug. The thing with Drax, where he's dancing, Drax rolls up and he just stops dancing, like as the way it was in the end credit scene in the first Guardians. And then the third one that was really cute was with Gamora, where she's just like, Groot, watch out! Groot just waves, hi, and then Gamora's like, hi, Groot, and then flies off to fight the monster.
Like, I think he's really cute. You can't just say no to that little face.
But then
he's a little dumbass, but he's very cute.
But then the other one is that I think it was it Quill or was it Drax that fell into the stereo? I can't remember off the top of my head.
I can't remember.
But when one of them falls into the stereo, Groot starts punching them because they broke the stereo.
I feel like that was Peter, but maybe I'm wrong.
Might have been Peter. Yeah, it doesn't matter. But you had all these cute moments, but yeah. It already starts off adorable.
But that adorableness expires pretty soon because we learned that something called a group of dicks called the Sovereign. That's their official title. Fight me.
The Sovereign, not the dicks, but the Sovereign.
Yeah, same thing. Basically hired them to like protect the batteries from the monster and whatnot. And for payment, they get Nebula. Because I guess Nebula was captured trying to steal from them. Apparently stealing is very frowned upon in the gold covered nitwits. But funny enough, the actress that was picked to play, what's her face? Aisha, High Priestess. She's like naturally 6'2", and they actually hired her because of her height, because they needed somebody really tall. And they also put stilts on her, so she actually looks like 6'7". So they did this on purpose to make her like look more intimidating and whatnot, which I think is a fun detail. And she does a great job playing just like the most annoying human being ever. And then, so that's it. They got Nebula. Everything is good. Aisha is like intrigued by Quill's heritage, which is interesting. And he's like, yeah, I'm Terran. But you're not fully Terran. He's like, yeah, well, I don't know what I am. She's like, She knows something, but she's too much of a snob to mention it. And then Rocket says something stupid.
Yeah,
but Rocket is kind of a jerk.
Well, Rocket's always been a jerk, but the thing that Rocket
He's more of a perp. Like, in the last one, he was like, nobody liked each other, so nobody was kind of supposed to be nice to each other.
Yeah.
Here, it seems like everybody's kind of bonded, and Rocket's just being a jerk unnecessarily.
Yeah, and the thing is that with Rocket, even before they fought the monster, and it leads into this moment here, Rocket's doing the eye wink thing.
Yeah, about the batteries.
But he's doing it. He's doing it both times. He did it wrong. You're not supposed to say anything at all as well, like the thing that he said, and then do the eye wink, because he did the eye wink at the
You don't have to explain to people how the eye wink works. Yeah. They know, except for Drax. Actually, but, so Rocket ends up saying something like, wow, you guys aren't jerks at all, and kind of does the wink, and Peter just looks at him like, what did you just do? And then as they leave, Rocket shows Drax that he stole some batteries from them. And they realize it pretty quickly, and then they chase after them. Nebula and Gamora clearly have some very unresolved issues left over from, you know, being raised by, like, totally not a psycho. So there's that.
I think James Gunn should have just called this episode Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Daddy issues.
Yeah, wow, yeah, everybody has daddy issues. Rocket has lack of daddy issues. Groot is in need of father figures, and he has a lot of them. Mantis even needs a father figure. That's actually very interesting. So as they're being pursued, their ship is damaged, but they notice that there's somebody out there that's like coming to their rescue, essentially. And they're yelling at Rocket for stealing the batteries, and Rocket doesn't care. And anyway, they crash, but another ship meets them there. And we see that it's this guy played by Kurt Russell and this weird-looking thing with antennas called Mantis. And The guy doesn't beat around the bush. He goes, I am Ego. I'm your dad, Peter, and I've been searching for you for a very long time.
What's a name, what's the name, like, Ego?
Like, I mean, it tells you pretty much everything you need to know about the guy.
I mean, that's true, but still, who goes around calling themselves Ego?
Look, not everybody has smart names. Don't forget, we're getting to Taserface.
You know what's a good name? I'm going to wake up and call myself Taserface.
Not everybody can be a winner. Sometimes you're just a loser. In this case, this is Taserface. Anyway.
But we're jumping a little ahead on that one.
A little bit. So, meanwhile, the Ravagers are on Pleasure Island. I mean, planet. And Yondu is basically, like, signaled to go and meet someone. And it's Sylvester Stallone, who's, like... I guess the guy, we'll find out later that he and Yondu very clearly have a history here. Yondu tries to make nice, but apparently the other Ravagers hate Yondu's kind of clan or sect, whatever you want to call it. And I guess they broke some kind of code. The Ravagers have a code. And one of the part of the code is not dealing in kids, which is something that we know Yondu does. But we also didn't know that, so we never figured out, we'd find out at the end of the first Guardians of the Galaxy that Yondu had been, and his Ravager group, had been sent to pick up Peter and take him to Daddy. What we find out now is that this is not the first job like that that Yondu and his crew have taken on. So Yondu says that he didn't know what was going on, and... apparently, Yondu's betrayal broke hearts. And there's kind of very obvious mutiny brewing amongst his, like, Ravagers. And then Aisha shows up. Also, it should be noted that the Sovereigns are so snooty, they don't even send out people on spaceships. They use, like, it's basically like video game-powered spaceships.
I mean, hey, it cuts down on the real-life casualties.
I guess, but it just doesn't have the same feeling as, like, when you, like, if you die in a video game, you die in a video game. If you die in real life, you die in real life. But anyway.
Yeah, but the Sovereign are just as much dicks that they'd rather just die in a video game than die in real life.
True, but then they also lose billions of units worth of equipment, and they're very pissy about that.
Yeah.
So anyway, Aisha we go back to Ego for a while. He hired Yondu, and Ego wasn't sure why Yondu didn't deliver Peter to Ego. Peter says it's because he was good for thieving, because he's so small. Drax is confused, which is pretty much most of the movies. Ego learned about the famous Star-Lord. I don't know how, but okay. And he invites everyone to come to his place. So there's also a very cute scene here where a little bit earlier when they crash land, everybody's arguing with Rocket about, like, this is all his fault and everything. And they call him a raccoon. He's like, I'm not a raccoon. And Peter calls him a trash panda. And that's the best thing in the entire movie. I think he's called a fox throughout the rest of the film. Nebula definitely calls him a fox, but he will forever be Trash Panda.
But one of the interesting things is that leading up to this, it is totally Rocket's fault. Mm-hmm. Because he stole the batteries.
Pissed off the Sovereigns and the High Priestess.
Made fun of them. He kind of essentially gloated out loudly that he stole the batteries.
Yep.
And then when they're trying to fly, he commandeers the flight from Quill.
Yep.
And if he had just let Quill fly the ship, they probably wouldn't have crashed the way they did.
Yep.
So, yeah, a lot of this is Rocket's fault. Yeah.
But anyway, so we learned that Mantis is very awkward and she talks kind of funny. And Gamora convinces Peter to go to Ego, and there's this cute story about how when he was little, Peter pretended that his dad was David Hasselhoff.
Because David Hasselhoff.
Sure. Knight Rider, I know.
Hell with that. Baywatch was until the 90s.
Poor anyway. Quill. Oh, Peter never got to see the magic that was Baywatch. Yeah, he dodged a bullet. Anyway, Rocket, so Rocket and Groot stay behind with Nebula to fix and watch the ship while Peter, Drax, and Gamora go with Ego and Mantis. And Rocket is very much on this, like, I want everyone to hate me kick. Because that's the other theme of this movie, family. And it's more about the, and it's not about the family you're born into. Clearly, because the family they were all born into were terrible. It's about the family.
Well, I wouldn't say that for Quill.
Except for Peter's mom.
Yeah.
Except for Peter's mom.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like.
But she's dead, so we're not counting her now. I'm a soulless robot. Come at me.
That's painful.
So Drax is being a little like semi-racist to Mantis, and we learn that she's an empath, which unlike a telepath, which oddly enough in the comics, she actually is kind of a badass. Like she has telepathy, she has empathy, she is like a master of various forms of fighting and kung fu and whatnot. So part of me is a little disappointed that we don't really get to see her do any of that like ever. Guardians of the Galaxy 3 better make it happen. No joke. So we learn that she can basically feel the emotions of others and sometimes slightly manipulate those emotions. She touches Peter. He's like, oh, do me. And he feels like she feels love, like super like amazing, genuine love for Gamora, which is really interesting because earlier when they first board the ship, Drax and Peter are talking. And Drax basically tells him that he's a loser and he needs to find a woman that is just as pathetic as he is. But yeah, he's definitely in love with Gamora. Nobody saw that coming. So they fly to the home. All right, so they go to Ego because Ego, as we'll find out later, cannot be like far away from his home, his planet, because, you know, he is a planet. It's weird. Just go with it. It's comics. Don't question it. Let's see. So while they're away, we also know that Mantis can put people to sleep. Meanwhile, back on the ship, Rocket is attacked by Ravagers. And he puts up a pretty badass fight. There's some good choreography. Rocket is flying. He has like that net thing that he uses, which is pretty cool. So boy's doing a lot. But, you know, he's kind of outnumbered and very obviously outgunned. And he gets captured. Nebula, tries to bargain. And yeah, basically they were hired by Aisha to, you know, bring back Rocket and the Guardians so that they can face punishment or whatever. And somebody mentions that they can get like a lot more money for them. And Yondu has the brains to say, oh, we can't just kill the Guardians of the Galaxy. And Yondu and Rocket and Groot are taken prisoners, basically. Oh, and his helmet is, like, broken or something. Or his, like, head thing. And there's a mutiny. And poor Kraglin, he's just like, I don't know what to do here. And so they get captured and taken aboard the Ravager ship. Let's see. Ego has a pretty planet. Like, it's kind of moon-sized, and he comes up kind of humble. I'm sure there's no dark secrets being hidden anywhere. And Drax asks about Dix. And, like, Drax, part of the funny thing about Drax is he's one of those characters that has no shame and no, like, no sense of, like, what is appropriate in a given moment. So he casually asks about Ego procreating, which we'll find out later happens a lot.
Yeah, and the thing with Drax is that I think part of him is also just that curious mind, because he's learning about Ego and about how Ego can create a form of himself. And he goes,
is it biologically, anatomically correct?
Yeah, and he's like, are you anatomically correct? Drax, that's not appropriate. But it adds good humor.
And I think it also talks a little bit about Drax's people, how they are not, like, sexually repressed. I think they could actually use a little bit of sexual repression. But that's a separate conversation.
Well, so, I think the other thing for them is that they're very literal.
Yeah.
So that plays a factor.
So Eagle basically said that, like, he was all alone in the universe and he started looking and looking for other life. And we kind of get an Ego history lesson. And we learn about how he fell in love with Peter's mom, but then he left. And so, meanwhile, Rocket is, like, tied basically in a chair on the Ravager ship, and he meets... Basically, I guess the plan was, like, they were going to sell off Rocket or something, like, and you tell them that you were sent by Taserface. And Rocket just starts being... He just starts laughing, because, first of all, nobody's going to be intimidated by a dude named Taserface. Like, you're just asking to get kicked on the playground. He's just a jerk. Rocket cracks a couple of jokes. They were very good. And I think it did help that Bradley Cooper actually did the motion capture for this, as opposed to just doing the voice work in the booth like he did for the last movie.
That was James Gunn still.
No, James Gunn did Groot's
motion that's capture, right. Yeah, yeah,
but Bradley Cooper did
That's
did
right, because James Gunn did both Groot and Rocket
in the first film.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then he just did Groot the second one.
Yes.
Yeah. And then he did Groot in Infinity War and Endgame.
There you go. So Nebula basically says that she kind of helps Rocket from dying. Rocket should be given to the priestess, and she's given a hand. And she gets a cool jacket, and then Kraglin gives her a ship. And we get kind of a little bit more background that was sort of hinted at in the first movie, or earlier in the movie, I should say, in a scene between Gamora and Nebula, where we learned that Gamora and Nebula were kind of forced to fight each other every day, essentially. And Gamora always won. And each time Nebula lost, Thanos would, like, substitute another piece of her with machinery instead of, like, I don't know, teaching her how to fight better. Because, you know, Thanos just, like, screams, like, support a father. And she is very bitter at Gamora for it. Kraglin isn't really sure what to make of that. He's like, okay, good luck. Because Nebula's going to take her revenge on Gamora and finally win a fight against her. Meanwhile, Peter wants to know why Daddy left. And part of it is, like, Ego explains that, like, he's tied to the planet. It's him. He is the planet, so we can't really leave for, like, ever. And Peter's, like, very clearly not over his mommy's death. I'm so shocked. And Ego says he loves Peter, and he has a lot to teach him about the light and the planet. And I guess, like, because Peter is, like, part Ego, he can, like, tap into the forces of the planet. And so they make a little ball, and they play catch, and that's something Peter always wanted to do, is play catch with his dad, and it's cute, and then they ruin it. So Mantis, meanwhile, we find out, was raised by Ego, and Drax's interactions with her are bizarre, because I think he's, like, very clearly attracted to her, but he doesn't really know what to make of it. It's just, to me, some of those scenes felt a little unnecessary, but whatever, that's just my opinion.
I think some of the stuff with Drax and Mantis was just kind of a foreshadowing to what was going to eventually come.
True, but I still think it could have been done a little bit differently.
Yeah.
It sounds like she's about to tell him something, but then Gamora shows up, and, like, something isn't quite right. Poor Groot, meanwhile, is being kicked around. Poor baby.
And he's having so cute. And having, like, booze poured all over him.
Yeah.
Although the one thing I will give the great Taserface credit for is when they're asking what they should have done to Groot, he goes, "No, he's too adorable
to kill." Know? Yeah,
he's too adorable to kill. I'm like, okay, this is cool. Okay,
cool. He gets, like, 2 points. So Yondu,
but then he loses them by having him kick the crap out of him.
Yeah. So Yondu and Rocket, meanwhile, are kind of locked in a jail cell, and we find out that Yondu was a Kree slave, actually, which is really interesting. And part of that is he was basically, his parents, like, sold him into slavery, and he was a Kree slave for 20 years or so. And he kind of sympathizes with Rocket, and he tells him about how he was rescued by the Ravagers, and Sylvester Stallone's character was the one that, like, gave him the code and taught him about it, but he was stupid. And it is this really nice bonding moment with Rocket because he kind of sees a lot of himself in Rocket. Because while Rocket wasn't a slave, he's essentially like a genetic experiment that was used and then discarded. And then Rocket tells Yondu about how Peter went off with his daddy. And he asks about why Quill was kept by Yondu instead of being given to Ego. And he doesn't really answer the question. And Groot, meanwhile, is still being, like, kicked around. And Groot is asked to find something experimental. And we find out later this is, like, the thingy that attaches to Yondu's head to make the arrow go, woo!
Yeah, I think they called
murder,
it...
Murder, 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 murder.
I think they called it, a fin or something. Fin, like,
yeah, it looks more like a mohawk. But we're just going to go with the arrow thingy go, woo! But it's funny because they're not explaining this well to Groot. So each time he brings something else, and it's always something wrong. At one point he brings a finger and we're just like not supposed to question that. But it's very cute because Groot is trying. And we learned that Groot does not like hats. So Kraglin, meanwhile, ends up helping Yondu and helps... And because I guess they killed all his friends. Poor Kraglin.
Well, it's not just that, but Kraglin, I think this, like, obviously, like, in the first one you get introduced to him, you see him as kind of like a second in command to Yondu. This one, you start seeing Kraglin come into his own.
Yes.
And see him go through some self-conflict because of what's going on with the crew and stuff like that, and he has that loyalty still to Yondu and stuff like that. But when he speaks up, that's why the mutiny happens. If he didn't speak up, the mutiny probably would have never have happened, and he realizes that.
Yeah, it's a good analysis. Kraglin is played by Sean Gunn, who is a really nice person. Had a nice chat with him at, very brief, but very nice chat with him at GalaxyCon. He was great. Shameless plug at the celebrities I meet. But anyway, so he ends up helping Yondu get the fin. And then this scene where he's just like killing everybody one by one with the arrow. It's like art. The only thing though, I think the music was fine for it, but I feel like you needed something like very sweet, like very operatic, just like maybe like Vivaldi's Four Seasons or something. Just like, or even with that like circus theme, that would have been fun. But
the great thing is though is that like Rocket goes, "Do you have any of Quill's music still on this ship?" And that is what scares the living piss out of everybody on that ship. The moment that music starts playing, they go, "Oh crap!"
So literally, they kill everybody on the ship that isn't them. And by they kill, I mean Yondu does.
No, yeah. Rocket got some kills in.
Groot gets his revenge too. And Rocket and Groot go to the command center. Taserface contacts the priestess, Aisha. And they tell, he gives them the coordinates of where they're going or where they're going to go. And Aisha's like contact person that answers the call laughs in his face because, yeah.
Taserface.
And everybody goes to Ego. And the funny thing is they don't just go to Ego. They go through 700 space gems. And they say you're not supposed to do more than 7 at a time. And we go through a couple of different planets. One is like we see Thanos again. And, oh, it should be pointed out that on the pleasure planet, we do see Howard the Duck again.
F green.
Yep. So anyway, there's a lot of space jumps. We'll get to that. There's more dancing between Quill and Gamora, and she kind of tries to reach Rocket, and she's not having any luck, and she's getting suspicious because, like, something is definitely off. Like, this is weird. And her and Peter kind of have a fight, and she's worried about his human half, that the Guardians are his real family, and, like, he found his family. So the whole biological family versus found family is also a theme. And Gamora leaves to get a better signal. Nebula shows up and just like, I love that. This is one of my favorite tropes where that person is just like casually standing there and there's like a giant ship of some kind just like blasting them. It's funny. So Gamora runs into a cave and let's see. Because the cave keeps getting smaller, eventually Nebula crashes. Gamora shoots back with the giant gun that like falls off the ship at the ship as it already crashed, basically. Or so that it crashes, which is pretty great. But then she goes in and gets Nebula. Let's see. And Nebula is still, meanwhile, trying to kill her. And obviously she doesn't. And it's revealed that like Nebula wanted a sister and blames her for what Thanos did to her. And Gamora's like, I was a kid. Like, what do you want from me? Peter and Daddy bond over a song. It's basically foreshadowing the relationship between Peter's mom and Ego, because he talks about how, oh, like my lady of the sea, or my lady is the sea. Eventually, Ego leaving his mom. And then let's see. So Peter has like some responsibility with his dad to like remake the universe, whatever that means. Mantis finally tells Drax that they're in danger, and just like that, Gamora and Nebula show up. And Ego tells Peter his side of the truth while Mantis is filling in the others. And he shows Peter everything else, how he like wanted to repopulate the universe, basically. But he was doing it because he wanted people that have that celestial, like, energy, whatever you want to call it. Gamora and Nebula are actually in the cave. And Gamora and Nebula actually find bodies, like, bodies up on bodies up on bodies of bones, which is just terrifying. Meanwhile, Rocket and the others are still doing these time jumps. You know, the planetary jumps. And one of them is the Stan Lee cameo, which is him in a spacesuit talking to the Watchers. And he mentions his Tony Stank line.
Yep.
And this time I was a FedEx guy.
Yeah, which kind of leads to the idea that Stan Lee was playing this ultimate character.
Right. And Feige said that was like a hint at the like elements that the fan theory that he was Uatu the Watcher. Let's see. So Yondu and everybody come to save Peter. Rocket has issues. Like, it's very obvious, and him and Yondu bond over that. Gamora finally tackles Mantis about the whole situation, and they find out the truth. And Peter's kind of mesmerized by the energy. He's being manipulated in a very, like, Loki scepter kind of way. And there's the flowers growing and spreading until all of everything is Ego. So that flower from the beginning of the movie comes back up again. But Ego has too much ego. Shocking, I know.
That poor Dunkin' Donuts.
That was a Dairy Queen.
Was it a Dairy Queen?
It was a Dairy Queen.
Oh, that poor Dairy Queen.
But anyway, Ego doesn't have enough power for this, which is why he needed, like, kids. Meanwhile, Mantis is explaining all of this to Gamora and Drax and Nebula. So Ego killed all of his kids, basically, that failed him. And he used Yondu to get the kids and bring him. And eventually, Yondu figured it out somehow. We don't really get an explanation of how he figured it out, but I guess
I would assume, and this is the most logical reason, is that he shows up at the planet and he notices that the kids ain't there anymore. When he asks about where the kids are and he doesn't get an answer, after a while, 1 + 1 = huh? I think the kids are dead.
Took him a while to figure it out, though, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, they have to save Peter because he's family. And then Ego says that he actually returned to see Peter's mom 3 times. And that if he knew he couldn't come back a 4th time, he'd want to stay. So, and then he says something like, it really hurt me to put that tumor in her brain. And there's no moment of realization. The next thing we see is just him blasting, Ego getting blasted. And Peter goes nuts and seemingly destroys him, but obviously he is just, he can, like, reassemble himself because he is the planet. This is just a facsimile of him on the planet.
Yep.
Ego thinks Peter needs to grow up, and they fight. Gamora connects to Rocket finally. Peter just, Ego kind of possesses Peter and destroys the Walkman, which is just, like, not cool, dude. And in Missouri, you see the Dairy Queen getting destroyed.
That poor Dairy Queen did not
I gotta ask, like, I don't think Missouri is that much of, like, a ditch that nobody decides to, like, call the anybody about the creepy goo. But maybe that's where Sword comes in, and we'll get more about Sword in WandaVision, and they'll casually drop a hint about it. But anyway, so Yondu crashes and they save Peter, and Gamora says, "I told you so," and Peter's like, "This isn't the time." And then at some point, as they're trying to escape, the Sovereign show up and starts blasting everybody, because that's helpful. So Rocket is not a fox. He is, in fact, a raccoon with a very fox-like sound, because he has the body of a fox, but also a raccoon, because raccoons are, like, fatter. But anyway.
I mean, hey, Rocket works out, man. I mean, he works out. I mean, we saw those abs when they all got hosed down in the first film.
Didn't actually see Rocket's abs. We saw Rocket's back, which had, like, implants and things in him.
Shut up. You're ruining the fantasy that Rocket is a jacked up beast. Anyways, go on.
Yeah, it's real hard. Anyway, so Ego wants to reshape the universe, but of course the universe has to be destroyed first. And there's lots of energy, and then Rocket has a bomb that they can use to stop Ego. And they said that first they need, in order to place the bomb, they need everything to stop a little bit. So they need Mantis to put Ego to sleep. And she's like, "Oh, he's too energized. I don't know if I can do it." And Drax is like, "I believe in you." And so she puts him to sleep, and he's like, "Yeah, I didn't think that would actually work, but good for you." And then it's just like, she couldn't keep him asleep long, but it does the job. She keeps him going for a while, yeah.
Until a certain moment happens.
Anyway.
When they're all doing the stand pose, that circular shot of the entire team.
Oh, yeah.
Because she still has him in the sleep. And then she gets hit with one of the rocks.
Oh, that's right. She gets knocked out. That happens
then,
later, though.
And then Drax yells out, "Mantis, watch out," afterwards. Yep, so she held it for a good while.
So Rocket teaches Groot which button to press, because no one else can fit into the little hole to get to Ego's brain. But it's just really funny. Rocket's telling him all this. He goes, "Okay, now repeat it back to me. And all you hear is, 'I am Groot. I am Groot, I am Groot.' No, not that button!" That was a really great scene. I really like that.
And then the part where they're trying to get tape.
Yeah, it's like, "Does anybody have tape?" And then there's that bit about, like, "Would masking tape work?" Wait, what do you mean you don't have masking tape? Why did you ask if masking tape would work if you didn't have it? There's some good, like, little bits between Yondu and Peter. So the Sovereign fleet gets decimated, and they are very sore losers about it. Ship explodes. Yondu, like, falling, kind of, like, keeping himself up via the arrow was kind of cool. And he's like, "Oh, you look like Mary Poppins." And he goes, "Oh, is he cool?" It's like, "Yeah, it's cool. It's all Mary Poppins, y'all." Then Mantis gets knocked out, which reawakens Ego. So Kraglin is basically ready whenever. Drax takes Mantis above ground. Gamora falls, and then saved by Nebula, and they both kind of fall, and they both are just like, "Okay, get it." Ego traps the ship, and Kraglin is, like, MVP, so he's able to, like, bring it back. Peter realizes that he can use the celestial power, which is great. But before that, Yondu tells him something about, like, "I don't control the arrow with my head. I control it with my heart." And there's, like, some cute little flashbacks of Yondu and Peter bonding, and I'll get into that in a little bit. So to make a long story short, Peter uses the power to fight Ego. Groot places the bomb. Then he presses the correct button. He thinks about it for a second, but he presses the correct button. And then they get out from the brain. Gamora and Nebula manage to head back up. Yondu stays behind to get Quill. And Rocket says, I have like one rocket pack and one helmet. And he gives it to Yondu.
Or one spacesuit.
Spacesuit and, a helmet. Or
well, no, it's just
jetpack and spacesuit.
Yeah, because the spacesuits that they have cover the entire body.
So, let's see. There's a Pac-Man fight, which is pretty cool because, you know, Ego's planet is basically like the Green Lantern. So things can be shaped in any which way. Peter's still fighting Ego. The bomb explodes. The power dissipates from Ego and the planet falls apart. Yondu saves Peter and he puts like the suit on him. And Peter's like proud of him, but obviously as he's like lifting into space and everybody else is on the ship right now and it's like in the air, Yondu dies and to save Peter basically. So it makes the ultimate sacrifice and they get back into space. Yondu gets really pretty flowers around him. And when the funny thing is like when Ego's lamenting a little bit earlier about Peter, he like takes the form of David Hasselhoff. So there's a legit David Hasselhoff cameo in the movie. We kind of rehash the David Hasselhoff story a little bit and that Yondu is dad. And Gamora tells Nebula that she's sorry. That, you know, she's Nebula's sister and Nebula still wants to kill Thanos though. So Crackler gives Peter a Zune. Apparently that's something that they had. And Kraglin gets the arrow. But something that's really cool is that I guess was it Kraglin or Rocket? One of them basically sent word about the sacrifice that Yondu made. So all of the Ravager ships arrive and he's given a full Ravager funeral, which is something Sylvester Stallone's character says at the Pleasure Planet you won't actually get. So Peter and Gamora are almost something. Baby Groot gets put to bed, which is really cute. He has a bedtime. Drax kind of likes Mantis. He's warmed up to her. And so the funny thing is that when Peter gets the Zoom, Crackler tells him that Yondu found it at some point. So anything is possible. When did the Zune come out? That was like early 2000s, wasn't it?
Yeah. So, and I actually know about the Zune because I used to own one and I used to sell them at GameStop because there was like an exclusive deal for selling them at GameStop.
Okay.
So for the Zune, obviously it was Microsoft's version of like the iPod.
The iPod. Yeah.
Which was also a lot better than the iPod suit. Fight me. I dare you.
Don't care, but
okay. So the Zune was essentially like an iPod made by Microsoft. It was a much better, actually interesting fact. It came out in around like I think 2006, 2007 ish.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And it a lot of stuff that you actually see with Microsoft Windows now is actually derivative from the Zune.
Okay, that's good to know.
It's actually kind of cool. But yeah, I actually enjoyed the Zune a lot better than other MP3 players. I use a Sony Walkman now because unfortunately my Zune died. And when it died, I gave it a proper Ravager funeral as well. Minus the fireworks.
Yeah. But what's really cool is Peter like freaks out like, yeah, I can hold like 300 songs or something. And Peter's like, whoa. And I'm like, yup, this is an 80s child. So that's that for the film. So before we get to the, oh dear God, five after credit scenes, let's talk about the overall themes of this film. So we have family, we have daddy issues, and we have like loving the family that you have and that you make.
And then also living with the choices that you make.
Yes, for sure. Here is where I have an issue. I think this whole Yondu is dad would have been a little bit better if they didn't kind of have him as like a secondary bad guy in the first film. Because there was the whole thing about him wanting, like Yondu ruled a lot by fear. And Peter mentions that, but he was like making jokes about like eating him and how like Yondu saved him and the other guys wanted to eat him because they'd never tasted Terran before. And Peter like just like that was not okay. But here we kind of see like, oh, Yondu taught him how to shoot and all that jazz. And it feels like that's a little bit like, yes, I could roll with this if you had given me hints of this earlier. It just kind of sounded like it was a little bit of...
In a way, you do. In a way, you do get in the first film because, I mean, you got to keep in mind, they always say in that first film, whenever it came down the Quill and the Ravagers talking to Yondu, is that the Ravagers always accuse Yondu of being soft on Quill. They and that was kind of also a theme throughout because like when he gives him the sphere with what you think is the Infinity Stone.
Oh yeah, and it turns out to be a troll. Immediately go after him.
Yeah, he laughs it off because he understands why Quill did what he did and he's okay with it.
So fine. I'll give it to you. Ego is a terrible father.
Really? Yeah. What gave that away? All the dead bodies and stuff like that?
I think Ego is the worst father of the MCU. I mean, like, Tony's dad's not a saint, but he's not, you know, murdering children. So, yeah, I think he's the worst. Well, I don't know. Thanos and... Nope. Ooh, worst father, Thanos or Ego?
I probably would have to go with Ego. Because his entire motive of having his children is just so he could take over the universe, whereas like he doesn't truly love them.
That's well, in his own.
Whereas with Thanos,
in his own sick way, twisted way, he kind of loves them. Yeah.
Yeah, but Thanos at least shows remorse and shows that he cares about like Gamora and stuff like that. Maybe not the best towards Nebula, but he definitely shows that passion towards...
Well, yeah, Gamora. It's obvious Gamora was the favorite child. Yeah,
but you don't get that with Ego, though.
That's true. Ego fakes it well.
Yeah.
So, let's get to the after credit scene. There are five. Credit after credit. So, there's actually something funny I noticed in the credits before I'll talk about it as we go through this. So, number one, is Kragler practicing with the arrow? Which is really funny because at one point he hits Drax. And then he just, like, runs away, which is great.
Poor Drax.
The second after credit scene is actually a hint at the original Guardians of the Galaxy. And they all kind of reunite. And we see this, a couple of them, in the Ravager funeral. Because they all do the whole chest bump fist thing. So, which is really cool. I wonder if we'll see some hints of that in the Eternals movie.
So, originally, there was a rumor that apparently Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 could heavily focus on them because there had been some discussion that because of the events of like Infinity War and Endgame, that could have in theory been the end of that story until James Gunn came out and said, no, there's actually more because there's supposed to be a bigger story that's supposed to be told to finish off the story between the father-son bond of Groot and Rocket. And so,
yeah, okay.
But there had been rumors that Stallone's team was going to be a primary focus going into Guardians of the Galaxy 3. Whether that happens or that happens later on, that's...
I definitely did not think that would happen, but I can see them being like playing some part in Guardians of the Galaxy 3 to an extent of like maybe coming in at some point as part of the plot line or showing up in the Eternals movie. Anything is possible.
Yeah, and I think there is something that's going to be big for them down the road. Maybe not Guardians 3 or maybe not Eternals itself, but something...
Anything is possible.
But something down the road for them is quite possible.
Which leads us to after credit scene 3. After credit scene number 3 is important because we see the High Priestess, we see Aisha meeting with somebody and she's showing something like, oh, is this a new...
She's meeting with her assistant.
Whatever. She's like, oh, is this a new gestation pod? And she's like, no, it's better. And it's a weapon capable of destroying the Guardians of the Galaxy. And I shall call him Adam, which is obvious reference to Adam Warlock, which is a big cosmic person in the comics. Which may be actually part of Guardians 3 is actually going to be like meeting Thanos' father as well, Alars, and seeing that part of it. But any, I don't know. Anything is possible. So as we go through the credits, and for the most of it, they're not like black on white letters yet. And we see like some of the dancing from the cast, but there's a funny hint in there. We actually see the Grandmaster.
And we also see at the very end, because they don't do the black background with the
until
white.
Until like way later,
no,
yeah.
At all.
Towards the end they do. Or maybe was just the subtitle credits.
That was
or
like
the dub credits on Disney Plus.
That was the dub credits on Disney Plus. If you watch on the DVD or Blu-ray, it's just the regular thing, because it actually goes all the way to the very end of the credits, because the last thing you actually see is David Hasselhoff, because they're playing the song that they did with David Hasselhoff. Right.
But there's still two other after credit scenes before we get there. The fourth is Groot has grown up, and it's moody teenager Groot who only cares about video games. And Peter being a dad to Groot, like, put that thing away, it'll rot your brain, was just the funniest thing ever. And he goes, now I know how Yondu felt, which is really funny. And the final after credit scene is Stan talking to the Watchers, and the Watchers are like, we're done with you, like, shoot. He's like, no, wait, you're my right home. Like, how am I gonna get back now? And that was Guardians of the Galaxy 2. As a sequel, like as a movie, it's okay. It was not, I think the first one was a lot stronger. I don't mind this one, but it's definitely not my personal favorite Marvel movie.
It was essentially a character builder for a lot of the characters.
This is true, and they needed it. And like I said, there's like, this is one of those movies that like, if it's on, sure, I can watch it. Am I craving to watch it? But I'm glad other people enjoy it. I think it was fine. I really loved Rocket's journey. I love Rocket as a character. You just want to sit there and like squish his little ears and like fluff it a little bit and like pet him because he's so cute.
I like the one thing where they're around the campfire and Mantis is like, may I please pet your
fox.
Pet? Yeah. Can I pet the fox? And Drax is like, yes, go right ahead. And she starts to try to pat him, and like Rocket just snaps at him, and Drax is laughing. It's like, oh, this is what we call a practical joke. I'm pretty sure Rocket wasn't thinking that.
So one of the things that I found really interesting is that I guess Chris Pratt, who plays our glorious hero, Star-Lord, actually lost his father, and this movie, he said, actually helped him kind of come to terms with that, which is kind of awesome. Well, he actually lost his father when he was filming Jurassic Park the year before, and I guess it just like hadn't, he was like trying to keep morale up, and he just wanted to like get through the project, so he didn't really like deal with it, and the movie actually helped him deal with that, which is really cool.
Good job, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
Thumbs up.
So yeah, this movie did a lot of things well. It continued the relationship between Gamora and Peter. There you go. Peter, that's his name. And so overall, I think it's a fine film. Not without issues, but it was fine. And Mary Poppins, y'all, was like a meme for like 3 months after.
Still kind of is a meme a little bit from time to time.
But, it's still a meme, yeah.
Yeah, but... But like, yeah, I mean, but when you look at it though, it develops characters some more. It definitely developed Kraglin more.
Yes, it did. He needed
Kraglin. Kraglin definitely needed the more development, especially the fact that you knew that he was going to be like you knew he was the second in command in a way to Yondu. So you knew he had to get development. And this film did it well for him. It'll be interesting to see if we see Kraglin moving forward, because I know where I'm jumping ahead, but apparently he did shoot a scene for the massive war at the end of the film of Endgame. There was an air battle that took place that ended up getting cut from the film.
I mean, Jesus, this movie, the original cut of this movie was like 5 hours long.
I know.
But and like, then they cut it down to 3, and we're just like, no, just leave it at 3. Just leave it at 3.
Yeah, but like, but Kraglin was supposed to have like be a part of that and have some type of interaction. That obviously got cut out. But
that's life.
So you don't know if maybe are we going to see him in Galaxy Guardians of the Galaxy 3? Could he end up maybe in something else down the road? It would be nice to see Kraglin come back.
It would be nice. He's had his own little hero's journey, and it would be nice to see where he goes from there. But the future, at some point, Guardians of the Galaxy theory will clearly have Adam Warlock, and who knows where we go with that.
They might have Thor.
Marvel expertise, huh?
They might have Thor still with them.
Honestly, I think I said this a while back, but the more I hear about Thor Love and Thunder, the less I want to see it. So, there, I said it, fight me.
But it'll be interesting to see, because I like the one thing that a lot of people have been saying is that Thor needs to remain chubby Thor.
Not gonna happen, but
we'll see. If they explain it in a good way as to why he's back to being the muscular Thor again, I can take it. But the way fair. Thor was at the end of Endgame, that was kind of like Thor at the top, at the peak of where he should be at that point with that story arc that he had been going through.
Well, whatever happens in Guardians of the Galaxy 3, we will have to wait until 2022 to find out.
Because, or maybe even longer, because everything's been pushed back a while.
I think that's the date after the pushback, but
maybe, I don't.
Maybe. Yeah. Either way, tell us some IMDb stats about this movie, Mike.
This film, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, aka Everyone Has Daddy Issues, went on for 2 hours and 16 minutes, and scored a 7.6 out of 10. Which is a 0.4 less than the first one, which did an 8.0 out of 10.
So it measured up pretty well to the first one, which is, you know, not too bad. Not too bad.
Not too shabby.
And I think that's all there is to say about this film. You know, it's our last, like, true cosmic film until we get to certain scenes in Infinity War. Yeah, that's where we are.
Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, okay, fine. Yes.
Yeah.
I forgot Thor Ragnarok existed for a few reasons.
Like, that's why you saw me looking back. I mean, the people can't see me doing it, but like, I was looking back at my DVD case going like, wait a minute, what's next on the docket? Which Spider-Man Homecoming is next up on the docket.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Yeah, huh. Well, look at that.
Followed by Thor Ragnarok, then Black Panther.
Black Panther, and then Infinity War, and then Ant-Man and Wasp, and then Endgame.
No, and then Captain Marvel, then Endgame.
Oh, God. Oh, people are going to hate me at the when we get to Captain Marvel, but I don't care.
And then we end it with Spider-Man Far From Home.
Yep.
And then eventually, hopefully, in November, we'll be able to re-come back to the MCU and talk about Black Widow. And hopefully in that time, we'll also have some of the Disney Plus shows to talk about.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Hopefully.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Key sentiment is hopefully, because a lot of the productions have been halted.
I think most of it is actually was mostly finished.
Yeah, but there's still, like, certain things have been halted. They may have pushed back the release dates of the shows because they want, especially for WandaVision, because they want that to line up with Doctor Strange 2.
Yeah.
You know,
we'll see how far they get.
Yeah. So it also plays a factor, regardless of what, you know, yeah, maybe production is done, but they may push it back because they have a plan on how it affects the MCU as a whole.
This is true. Yeah, next up we have Spider-Man, which so much comic book stuff to talk about and so much of movies to talk about before we even get to Homecoming, but it'll be fun. Spider-Man was, he was my first superhero love, that is. Where did you think I was going with that?
Somewhere down a rabbit hole I didn't know.
Yeah.
All right, so Sasha, before this gets even more awkward than it already is, which is totally your fault, where can the people find you on the social medias?
That was your fault, not my fault. I said it was my first superhero love. It's not my fault your mind went to the gutter. Anyway, you can find me on geekgirl101.tumblr.com and, of course, on my very lonely Instagram with pictures of my cats at geekycaptain.
And you can find me on the social medias at Twitter at thelindenbaum75, facebook.com/x75productions, and everything, of course, on txhthockey.com, and do the /nerdy-notions for this podcast.
So with that, get your web shooters together, because Spider-Man is gonna come out next week.